Before touching on the many things that have taken place in the last year, as well as what's ahead, I want to begin by acknowledging what we've been dealing with for the last month. The flooding that our community experienced in February represents the highest verified levels of our river in recorded history. The St. Joseph River crested at 12.7 feet, nearly 2 feet above the previous record, and 7 feet above flood stage. I want to credit our team for their quick action throughout the incident, from first responders on rescue and traffic to public works teams clearing grates and clearing catch basins, 311 call takers who worked extra hours, our innovation team creating an online map in real time with closure information. Just about every part of our city team played some role. I am thankful for the visits to our hardest hit areas from Senator Donnelly, Congresswoman Walorski, and Governor Holcomb, and we will continue to work with state and federal agencies going forward. The County Emergency Management Agency is continuing to gather information on flood damage that will be very important for us to qualify for the federal aid in months ahead. I'm also thankful for the efforts of many volunteers, including the Red Cross, Team Rubicon, and countless other groups and local companies stepping up to help. We are still in the process of assessing city damage to city properties like our river trails, while supporting families trying to get back to normal as quickly as possible through connections to resources and expedited support from our building department. And we're going to engage with impacted neighborhoods for an after-action review to look at lessons we can learn to handle future emergencies. That river flood exceeded the 100-year mark, and by some measures, we were told that we entered the range of a 500-year flood. And as all of us here in South Bend know, that comes less than 2 years since another part of the city was impacted by flash floods from extreme rainfall. You may remember that at that time, we were told that that was a 1,000-year event. So either we've run some extraordinary odds these last couple years in South Bend, or something is changing under us. I now consider it probable that increased rainfall in our area, as predicted for decades by climate scientists, is potentially here to stay. So for South Bend, these issues are no longer a political football. They are an on-the-ground reality that we will need to plan for, even if it means changing some of our assumptions about land use and disaster preparedness. And I have directed our leadership team to begin assessing how our city should think differently about our future through the lens of climate adaptation. This evening, I'm looking forward to sharing with you reflections on some of the progress that we've made and a preview of some of the moves to come. But the bottom line is this: our city's momentum is extraordinary. We have a lot to celebrate, and we have our work cut out for us. So what I'm going to share tonight is the result of dedicated work by over 1,000 city employees who serve every day, guided by the values that define our administration: excellence, innovation, accountability, inclusion, and empowerment. The work of our employees, wherever they serve, from a desk in the county city building to a patrol car on the far south side, all goes toward that one unifying mission that holds our administration together. We deliver services that empower everyone to thrive. It would take me all night to even name all of those services in any detail, and I promise not to do that. Although I can tell you for the first time the number of services we undertake as a city. As part of our priority-based budget process, we have assessed and cataloged all of the work of this administration in ways that we never were able to do before. We've identified 851 discrete lines of effort in this city. For another way to look at it, consider the number of calls our 311 operators get. Last month, when we celebrated the 5-year anniversary of 311, our operators had handled 685,000 calls on issues ranging from water bills to animal control. So tonight, we're going to get just an overview of the many areas where the city is advancing. First and foremost, safety and health, the essential role of any government. In some ways, our public safety landscape has never been as demanding as it is today. Our community's 911 service has been integrated into a single center covering all of St. Joe County, overseen by a partnership between all of the agencies in our area. The transition was complex and difficult, but under the new director, our financial and operational picture is becoming clearer and clearer. Every agency has brought something to the table, including Mishawaka, making a new director available, and South Bend's IT personnel helping to manage GIS issues so that dispatchers have accurate mapping information for the community. Meanwhile, our police department has been adding to its ranks after a number of retirements and departures created a need for more personnel and, with it, a historic opportunity to shape the department for the future. We just swore in some of our newest officers, a talented group of diverse men and women whose backgrounds include law enforcement experience, college education, and military service. Our subsequent application cycle brought 136 applicants, including 19 women and almost 35% racial and ethnic minorities, moving us closer to the goal of a department that fully reflects the community we serve. I continue to urge anyone who cares about policing effectiveness to encourage talented applicants from all backgrounds to consider a career in law enforcement. All of us must become recruiters. The growth in the department is timely. On one hand, overall major crime fell by about 1% compared to the previous year, something that is unlikely to attract headlines. What is in the headlines is an unacceptable number of violent crimes in our city, including three heartbreaking deaths of teenagers this year. This rise is consistent with recent national trends, but that does not have to be our fate as a city. Crime rates in our city remain lower than they were when I was a child here, but this is cause for serious concern, and we must work very hard and together to reverse the recent uptick and make sure that South Bend is an exception to the national pattern. The centerpiece of our strategy on gun violence remains the Group Violence Intervention, or GVI, now entering its fifth year. The GVI strategy rests on communicating directly with individuals found most likely to be involved in gun violence. Now, the majority of people we have engaged through this effort have gone on to stay out of trouble, largely thanks to partnerships with social service agencies. This year, we're adding street outreach workers who can help connect people to services and working to break cycles of violence and retribution. The GVI is a true community partnership, not just with law enforcement, the community foundation, social services like Goodwill, and all levels of the legal system. Meanwhile, we will soon be asking the city and county councils to approve a renewed partnership with the prosecutor's office to support joint and specialty units serving public safety in our area, like the Metro Homicide Unit and the Special Victims Unit. Our city is safest when community members and police are partners to keep our neighborhoods safe. That's why we are so focused on community policing. Last year, officers undertook over 7,000 foot patrols, attended 168 neighborhood meetings, and conducted Coffee with a Cop outreach opportunities around our community. And with that, we have seen the number of incidents leading to a use of force go down by a third in the last 4 years, and the number of investigations and complaints against police officers falling dramatically. In April, we introduced our online Police Transparency Hub, an extension of our open data policy, so that any resident can easily get facts on everything from crime rates to community complaints and officer commendations. And for maximum accountability and transparency, this year will bring the implementation of body-worn cameras to provide more detailed records of what takes place during calls for service. Meanwhile, fire suppression and emergency medical services continue to be among the best in the state. We had zero fire fatalities in 2017, reflecting not just good fortune, but preparation. And we will continue to work on community risk reduction from high school EMT training to distributing smoke and carbon monoxide detectors for owners in need. Our world-class fire training center is training a new generation of firefighters, including a recent hire group that is 28% minority, 20% veteran, 16% female. And a new Station 4 is just weeks away from opening on the west side, while construction on the east side will begin on a new Station 9 in River Park, after extensive dialogue with the neighborhood to make sure that we identified the best location. Looking ahead, the department will also be piloting a community paramedicine program to help frequent users of EMS find a medical home. We believe we can unlock better patient outcomes and major taxpayer savings through alternative methods of providing EMS service to individuals falling through the cracks of our mainstream hospital and insurance system. Today, the lines have begun to blur between physical safety and public health, especially when addiction and mental health are concerned. And while there is no city department for health, we are committed to working closely with the county health department and other players on the major public health challenges of our time. One striking example that calls for this work is opioid use and addiction, which has now overtaken vehicle accidents and homicide as a leading cause of preventable death in our community. While we have not seen the runaway growth in overdose deaths that affect some parts of Indiana, the rates are still so high that we must be concerned. Our EMS personnel delivered nearly 500 life-saving doses of Narcan in 2017, double the previous year, to address patients with life-threatening overdoses. We are in active partnership with the clinical and law enforcement community to make sure that we do more, because it's going to require everyone to step up. In particular, we are calling on more area physicians to look into how to become certified in the medication-assisted therapy, or MAT, a gold standard approach in outpatient care that helps patients overcome opioid addiction. And we urge all residents to participate in pill drops that get surplus prescription medicines out of your medicine cabinet and disposed of safely. In addition, as information has come to light concerning unethical practices at some companies related to the production and distribution of opioids, South Bend is planning to take legal action against unscrupulous companies to recover resources that will help us address this issue. Getting less attention nationally is the issue of synthetic cannabinoids, sometimes called synthetic marijuana. These products, sometimes available in convenience stores and gas stations, are in fact much more dangerous than actual marijuana. I want to commend the St. Joseph County African American Democratic Coalition for helping to raise awareness on this issue, and thank the council for passing an ordinance banning local businesses from selling this product. We will continue to closely monitor this issue, and we call on all businesses to do the right thing. Closely related to issues of mental health and substance abuse and addiction is the issue of homelessness in our community. A compassionate city, and we are nothing if not a compassionate city, lifts up those most in need and seeks solutions for its most vulnerable. And indeed, I believe today our city is undertaking what might be the strongest concentration of resources and effort to go into this issue since the Center for Homelessness was first established. Our office convened a working group on homelessness last year, and its report lays the groundwork and the framework for our administration's policy. The group called for enhanced access to permanent supportive housing, the establishment of an intake center, linking the chronically homeless to needed services, and enhanced coordination and data sharing. The administration is at work on all of these priorities. The city-sponsored Project Warm, operated by Hope Ministries, has provided crucially needed bed space in winter months, even as we work on longer-term solutions for those who are hardest to house year-round. We partnered with South Bend Heritage Foundation to open the Fuse Center, Oliver Apartments, in November. This facility relies on an approach called Housing First, recognizing that residents facing the greatest challenges must first have a roof over their heads before we can address many other obstacles. This facility hosts 32 men and women, and at last count, we learned that at least 12 of those had previously resided under the Main Street Bridge. Based on this success, we are partnering with the Center for the Homeless to expand permanent supportive housing access within our community. The city also committed $1.4 million to establish an intake or gateway center, partnering with Ivy Tech to reuse modular classrooms that they no longer need. Operated in partnership with Hope Ministries and developed with guidance from federal leaders, this center will be the first low-barrier shelter open in South Bend, providing transitional housing and supportive services for the formerly homeless individuals as we work to move them into long-term answers. City staff are now finalizing the location for the Gateway Center, working closely with agency partners and local institutions. Meanwhile, just this week, volunteers from La Casa de Amistad partnered with Hope Ministries and Project Warm to provide municipal IDs to those experiencing homelessness, eliminating a common barrier to housing access. We're also close to being able to verify our success on a longstanding goal of this administration to functionally end chronic homelessness among veterans in this city. Another area of public health that deserves community-wide attention is the issue of lead exposure in children. Our city drinking water is safe, but we do face the issue of lead paint and other pathways to exposure in our houses. That's why the city is participating in a lead affinity group to tackle this issue with partners like Notre Dame, IU South Bend, the Near Northwest Neighborhood, the County Health Department, and the Bowman Creek Educational Ecosystem. The group is hiring community health workers to canvas the hardest hit areas and encourage testing. and joining the National Green and Healthy Homes Initiative, a nationally recognized effort with a track record of successfully managing lead remediation in cities across the U.S. to make sure we are poised to take advantage of potential future state and federal funding. We have to ensure that every child is tested for lead and that the parents of any child exposed beyond the CDC action level of 5 micrograms per deciliter gets the information they need. And for that reason, I am pleased to announce tonight that the city will be partnering with South Bend Community Schools and the county beginning next school year to make testing available for every child enrolled in our public schools. This is imperative because only with this information can our community fully address the scope of the issue. Now, what all of our health and safety challenges have in common is that they cannot be dealt with by one agency alone. They require partnerships between multiple players, and the city is always ready to do our part. The good news is that South Bend is already becoming a healthier community, and I'll give you just one example of how city action supported that. Recently, unbeknownst to me, researchers from the University of Missouri Medical School came to South Bend to evaluate the impact of the smoking ban ordinance that went into effect last year. Those researchers found a 92% reduction in particulate matter air pollution in bars just 5 weeks into the ban. Before, full-time bar employees were exposed to 4 times the EPA limit for particulate matter. After the ordinance, levels dropped well below the limit. And since particulate matter increases the risk of heart disease, heart attack, and death, it is no exaggeration to say that this local action is now saving lives in our city. If public safety and health represent the social foundation for our city, the physical foundation is no less important. That's why infrastructure investment has been such a key focus for our administration. The most visible change, of course, has been the completion of the downtown stage of our Complete Streets policy, known as Smart Streets. The Smart Streets initiative has resulted in safer, more appealing streets and has already been credited with helping to attract over $90 million in private investment, well over a threefold return on the public investment that we made. The converted JMS building, the Aloft at Liberty Tower, the LaSalle Apartments, the soon-to-be-open Courtyard Marriott, and several other developments are signaling the renewed energy flowing into our downtown core now that we have a downtown streetscape that supports urban life. And with it come more job opportunities for residents in every neighborhood. I had to double check on this image because it really looks like one of those architect's renderings where they just paste the little pictures of the people walking down the street, but those are actual happy people in downtown South Bend. And like many changes that are controversial when you first do them, it's difficult once it's there to remember that it was any other way. And so we're trying to make sure that we keep some before and after pictures as a reminder. I will confess that there is a 1 to 2 minute increase in the length of time it takes to get from one end of the city to the other. We think it's worth it. I don't mean to say that downtown is the only area to see investments in streets. The Western Avenue corridor saw a major lift with a $3 million investment bringing new curbs, sidewalks, pavement, trees, and other enhancements to that part of the West Side, interacting wonderfully with community-led efforts like West Side Wednesdays to build pride and energy in the neighborhood. That project recently was awarded the Indiana Chapter of the American Planning Association's 2018 Hoosier Planning Award for outstanding implementation. Meanwhile, last year saw the completion of the Olive and Sample overpass, a major improvement for traffic flow on the West Side. And this fall, we will completely rebuild the intersection of Lincoln Way West and Charles Martin Senior Drive, making it safer for pedestrians and cars, removing unnecessary paving, adding new sidewalks, street trees, and lighting to this key West Side node. Technology is going to continue to transform how we deliver our basic services, from a paving website with information on streets planning, to iPads on leaf trucks that make our pickup more efficient, to automated arms on our solid waste vehicles, helping to save money and, more importantly, dramatically reduce worker injury rates for trash pickup, as evidenced by workers' compensation claims. We are going to continue applying any new technology that can help us do a better job. And right now, we are launching a pilot using iPhones mounted on dashboards to help us track potholes and road damage. Speaking of potholes, our street crews have been unusually busy this year as a consequence of the fierce winter that we've experienced and that doesn't quite seem ready to let go of us. That crew has filled over 500 potholes a day, 17,000 in the year 2018 already. The team has been relentless in addressing the impact of this year's fierce winter, even as we plan for paving for the longer term in the year ahead. A little bit less visible is what's going on underground, where work continues on our long-term control plan designed to improve our sewer system in accordance with the Clean Water Act. Last year, I made the case in Congress for federal regulators to take account of affordability, since we do not receive any funding from outside to carry out this work. As I testified in May last year before U.S. House Subcommittee on Water Resources and Environment, the current consent decree places tremendous burden on taxpayers, ratepayers, especially low-income ratepayers in our city. But thanks to our city's smart sewer system launched under the Lickey administration and continued in new ways on our watch, we have been able to design a more effective way to make these improvements with a combination of traditional and green infrastructure. If and only if we get federal approval, we will be able to save hundreds of millions of dollars for South Bend ratepayers. And you can expect to hear more about this in the months to come. In order to thrive tomorrow, we also have to pay attention to an entirely new category of infrastructure. Digital infrastructure. Residents need to know that they can rely on good digital infrastructure, and we need to make sure that it is equitably delivered to all residents. That's why we established a canopy of Wi-Fi access over downtown in 2015, and later expanded access to the Martin Luther King Jr. Center and the Charles Black Center. Today, I can announce that we plan to develop this Wi-Fi access, expanding it along major corridors extending away from downtown to benefit residents on stretches of Western, Lincoln Way, Mishawaka, and Miami to help combat the digital divide in our city. We're also pleased just last week to announce a partnership with the St. Joseph County Public Library and MetroNet to pilot the Martin Luther King Jr. Center as a technology site with computer and document services to help bridge that digital gap. Digital and transportation infrastructure came together last summer as we announced a partnership with LimeBike, bringing dockless bike sharing to South Bend. That launch cemented our city's position as a beta city, a place where companies can pilot new technologies before scaling to larger cities, giving us the advantage of being an early adopter. Since that program launched, there have been 210,000 trips taken by 28,000 riders. And even in the coldest parts of this fierce winter, it is notable that not one winter day has gone by without somebody riding a Lime bike in South Bend. This program, which costs no taxpayer money, has enhanced mobility everywhere, from our college campuses to the last mile for low-income commuters getting to work. Now, I will say that as a community, we need to use this new technology responsibly, especially when it comes to where bikes go at the end of a ride. So we are counting on users to make responsible decisions on where to leave shared bikes, out of the right-of-way, out of the middle of a sidewalk, not in the river, not in the mayor's front lawn, but in a bike parking space. Some cities have addressed this through regulation. We are hoping we can do so through etiquette, but we will continue in dialogue with the council to make sure that we are doing the right thing. And just a couple days ago, I was able to see a prototype for a Lime bike scooter, which is being tested in some American cities. That is something that we will also watch closely and make some decisions about how that could potentially benefit our community. Last month, we also received the very exciting news that South Bend was named a champion city in the Bloomberg Mayor's Challenge, one of only 35 cities selected from a pool of over 300 in this major competition. Over the next 6 months, we'll be piloting a solution for reliable, affordable transportation for workers, trying to tackle one of the main barriers to finding and keeping a steady job. We will then be eligible to advance to the final round, seeking a $1 million or even $5 million prize, in another indication that South Bend is measuring up well alongside some of the best-known cities around the country. In addition to finding better ways to get around our city, we are seeing expanded options for how to get between cities. The return of American Airlines to South Bend is a major vote of confidence in our regional economy, with new twice-daily flights adding 93,000 flight seats to Dallas, Fort Worth, and Charlotte beginning this June. Meanwhile, the ride to Chicago is going to get much quicker, thanks in part to the South Shore's double tracking project in Michigan City, and in part to our own local commitment to help shift to a quicker route into town. We are doing everything we can to make sure that the decision about where that route will go is a responsible one, carefully assessing the economic impact of different possible sites of a future station. Within days, I expect to receive the final report from experts who are helping us to assess the costs and benefits of various options, from an alternate route into the airport to a whole new station, either near the current route or even in our downtown. All of this is inseparable from the continued pattern of extraordinary economic growth in our city. City-supported projects created 675 jobs in 2017, a number likely to rise as those projects are completed. Counting only the projects that involved our Department of Community Investment, we saw over $200 million of private investment in our community, supported by $13.6 million in TIF funding, $9.6 million in tax abatements, and $1.2 million in IRF loans to assist growing businesses in South Bend. And in a city that saw unemployment approach 14% during the darkest days of the Great Recession, this year we saw it dip below 3.2%. We even saw southbound unemployment go below the national average some months, something we haven't seen in a very long time. We've seen a reduction in the poverty rate of around 1% in a 3-year period. And while I know that sounds like a small number, in a community our size, that means 1,000 residents lifted out of poverty. We know we have a long way to go, but we are headed in the right direction. More people are choosing to live in the heart of our city, in developments like the former LaSalle Hotel and the Studebaker Lofts and the JMS building. We're soon going to open the downtown Marriott, and the Aloft Hotel started welcoming guests last fall. The Ivy at Berlin Place, the Hibbard Building, will further expand residential units in the downtown area, and at the corner of Jefferson and Main, we will soon see the first new downtown office building. I got so excited I skipped my own slides. The first new downtown office building in nearly 3 decades. The city has acted to protect South Bend's vibrant architecture, acquiring the historic Lafayette Building across the street from the County City Building for restoration and reuse, and investing in an innovative facade rehab on Studebaker Building 84, a building that has taunted our skyline with memories of what once was in our economy. Eddy Street Phase 2 has begun on the near northeast side, and we can continue looking forward to developments like South Bend Chocolate's Dinosaur Museum and new development on the wharf site soon. The Portage Prairie Business Park continues to expand to accommodate the distribution market, and the progress in our emerging tech center at places like Ignition Park and the Renaissance District has attracted visitors from Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan's Comeback Cities Tour to the inaugural meeting of Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti's Accelerator for America project to a special visit from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. In addition to vibrant development downtown, the city has been active in neighborhoods across South Bend, from streetscape improvements and award-winning urban planning in the southeast neighborhood to the restoration of the historic Armory Building on the east side of the river, leveraging over $150,000 in improvements to Westside businesses through the Westside Main Street's Facade Grant Program. But inclusive economic growth isn't just about buildings, it's about people. That's why we are developing resources to help the workforce side of the equation with skills and training. Over 100,000 South Bend residents advanced their careers through our Pathways program, getting better paying jobs to improve their quality of life. And we are growing that program in 2018 with bilingual services. At the other end of the cradle to career path, we are partnering with area early childhood providers to help them take advantage of expanded state funding with a city commitment to partner with United Way and Ready to Go Straight St. Joe to boost the quality of our pre-kindergarten options. The city is offering grant funding to help more South Bend children access these high-quality pre-K experiences for a better start in school and in life. It's also my pleasure to announce that the nationally recognized Drucker Institute is working with our Department of Innovation and Technology to design a lifelong learning initiative for our city. This will help our community enhance equity and open opportunities for residents to gain new knowledge and develop their skills. You'll be hearing much more about this effort in the months to come. As our economy grows, future economic policy here will reach far beyond simply trying to get more growth and jobs. When businesses seek taxpayer involvement, we have an opportunity to shape that growth according to community priorities, like inclusion, so that the rising tide truly does lift all boats. The Department of Community Investment opened 2018 by establishing a new Division of Engagement and Economic Empowerment, a division that has already hosted an Inclusive Economy Summit with the Federal Reserve of Chicago, joined the Regional Bank On Alliance to connect low and moderate income residents with credit and banking services, collaborated with community organizations and stakeholders on a qualitative housing study, and organized a community organizing training session with the Near Northwest Side neighborhood to promote engagement and civic leadership. Residents and our business community should expect to see continued focus on making sure that we have not just top-line numbers on the economy that we like, but a real track record of making residents from all walks of life better off. The city's an employer, too, and we seek to lead by example as an employer of choice. That's why, starting this year, New Year's Day, we now provide eligible city employees with 6 weeks of 100% paid parental leave following the birth or adoption of a child. Already, we have 10 city employees taking it. My team assures me that this is not causing any increase in our population, but if so, so much the better. It is giving parents a chance to bond with the child and adjust to their new family situation. So even though the United States is the only industrialized country in the world not mandating leave for new parents, employers can step up. And just as we did when we elevated the wage of the least paid city employee, we are urging other local governments and other local employers to follow our lead and make this benefit a priority. Our city's employee clinic, opened in 2016, has been good business as well as a good benefit. Amid rising national healthcare costs, we actually saw our healthcare spending go down by hundreds of thousands of dollars. And most importantly, we're seeing the benefits of a healthier city team. It's not just about what we do, it's how we do it, as efficiently, as transparently, and as effectively as possible. Our legal team has quietly upheld the values of accountability and transparency, processing 2,914 requests for public information last year alone with zero violations. And the law department's efforts on training and compliance, working with every city department, are part of why the city's settlements and legal claims have gone down dramatically over the last 5 years. Innovation and IT staff have worked on projects ranging from helping the 311 Center drive average response time now down to 9 seconds, to launching the SBSTAT 2.0 program to help us manage parks, police, utility, and fire department initiatives. To keep up this kind of progress, South Bend will have to be creative about the conditions that support growth. Gone are the days when economic development consisted solely of luring big factories from other states. Incentives and deal flow will always be part of the story, but when it comes to economic development, the lesson of this century has been the importance of quality of place. That was the insight of the Regional Cities of Northern Indiana program, which we continue to put to work to benefit our community. And it's one of the reasons why 2017 saw the creation of a new department, the Venues, Parks, and Arts Department, with a mission to inspire a more livable South Bend for all. By bringing functions from Parks and Recreation to management of the Morris and Century Center under one roof, we have optimized a team that can make sure the city has the best public spaces and resources for a vibrant life year-round. And they've already got their hands full, thanks to the MySB Parks and Trails program, the largest investment in our shared public spaces in the city's history. Touching every side of the city without raising taxes and leveraging $14 million in outside funding on top of the city funds allocated with the approval of the council and the Redevelopment Commission, we are dramatically enhancing our city's shared public spaces. And we're not just doing it because we believe this city deserves great parks and recreation assets. We're doing it because we have learned that great public spaces support the health, safety, equity, and economy of our community. This plan will touch 35 parks and nearly 20 miles of trails as it re-envisions our community's relationship with the St. Joe River, our green spaces, and our parks facilities. South Bend residents participated in this planning through thousands of pieces of feedback, hundreds of hours of public meetings, and dozens of resident engagement sessions, something for which we received the Indiana Parks and Recreation Association's 2018 Inclusion Program of Excellence Award. Some projects are already complete, like the welcome patio at the Martin Luther King Center, the splash pad at Fremont Park, and the basketball court at Kennedy Park. Other plans will come online later this year. One of our flagship projects, the Charles Black Center, will reopen early this fall after a renovation and expansion, with more basketball courts, a larger fitness center, and a bike shop. This $4.5 million investment in the West Side is not just an investment, but a statement that all residents deserve great parks. Through the generosity of the Pickhagen Band and other community partners, Howard Park will be re-envisioned with more event space, a new water feature, and a new recreation building. And Chasten and I are looking forward to introducing the first dog, Truman, to the new dog park at Rum Village. Part of just a number of improvements across the system, including some that won't be quite as flashy, modernizing restrooms and improving parks accessibility, but all of which will make this city a better place to live. With an eye toward history, we are improving the entrance and refurbishing headstones in the city cemetery. And community volunteers managed to raise nearly $650,000 in private contributions to restore the Studebaker Electric Fountain, which will find a new home in Leeper Park in 2019. Investment in trails will make them more friendly to walkers, joggers, and cyclists. And as part of our focus on equity, I'm sharing with you this evening that I have committed to join the 10-Minute Walk Campaign from the Trust for Public Land. This is a recognition that a community is safer, healthier, and happier if all residents are within a 10-minute walk of a park. We've got some work to do. Right now, 63% of our community meets that goal. But through the investments that we are about to make, we aim to boost this to 75% by 2020 and then work on getting it beyond that level. Now, a great city also has great events, and the first annual Best Week Ever was a resounding success in 2017. Over 50,000 attendees came to events throughout the week, celebrating the arts, music, and culture of the city. So, we are making this an annual affair, and I'm looking forward to this year's version, which I am expecting to be the best week ever, starting on May 28th. Now, the goal of all of our safety, infrastructure, economics, and parks work is for our residents to be able to thrive in every neighborhood in the city. Neighborhood quality starts with the basics, like safety and upkeep. Our code enforcement department has been adding to its toolkit to promote vibrant, healthy neighborhoods using data and GIS mapping, and focusing on neighborhood outreach to reduce demolitions and boardings by over 40%. While their NEAT crews picked up over 3.5 million pounds of litter and debris in 2017. And Animal Care and Control has doubled the number of pet adoptions, increased pet licensing by a third, and reduced the euthanasia rate for cats and for dogs. And we're not just keeping our neighborhoods clean, we're building whole new ones to meet the demands of a growing city. During the summer, we broke ground on the Village at Riverwalk, thanks to years of work preparing a site formerly used for bus maintenance. The development, which will include 43 single-family residences and 48 townhomes, represents our city's growing ability to turn and face the great river that gives our city her name and make the most of that community treasure. Meanwhile, with support from council members, we have engaged experts to launch a housing market study that will help us better understand what kinds of housing our residents want and can afford. Information we will use to guide our housing priorities in the coming years. We're also working with council to update zoning rules to support revitalization in all different kinds of neighborhoods and to keep red tape from getting in the way of diverse types of housing. Meanwhile, local social entrepreneurs are working to figure out how to provide potential homeowners financing for lower priced houses where gaps exist in the existing finance market. And we're taking a fresh look at the funds we receive from the federal government to see how we can best use those dollars to empower our residents and advance more vibrant neighborhoods. To keep all this going, we're going to have to continue being good stewards of taxpayer funds. We continue to balance our general fund budget and maintain healthy cash reserves. Just today, we received word that South Bend was again reaffirmed on our AA bond rating, one of the best in the state and the only city outside of the Indianapolis area at that high level. We're also proud of our finance team, the only city in Indiana to earn all three awards from the Government Finance Officers Association, one for comprehensive financial reporting, one for budget presentation, and one for the transparency of our popular annual financial report. But staying in such good financial shape will not be easy. We're just one more budget cycle away from the 2020 budget, when changes in state law on property taxes will cost us $2.4 million in general fund and parks revenue, plus reductions to TIF. Further fiscal pressure is coming from litigation around so-called dark stores. A loophole in Indiana law has allowed certain big box stores to argue that their properties should be assessed for tax purposes based on the value of other empty abandoned stores in the same area. Even though this defies common sense, the strategy has been used successfully in many places, including South Bend. Both Kohl's and Meijer have sought to take back some of what they had already paid in taxes, and we are going to be closely watching whether other big box chains in this area choose to pursue this strategy, because it will affect funding for services from police and fire protection to street and sidewalk improvements. So the city is going to have to be proactive to stay ahead of these and other financial pressures. We're consolidating our facilities and purchasing divisions to help capture cost savings, continuing to automate and enhance city services for maximum efficiency, exploring further partnerships with county and other agencies, and continuing to drive savings in employee healthcare costs. And we will continue to seek to use technology to enhance our cost effectiveness, such as when our innovation team helped first responders digitize radio services and update cellular solutions for security and fire alarms, moves that will save the city over $300,000 per year. We anticipate some other positive factors that can balance some of the fiscal pressure ahead. We negotiated a unique and very supportive agreement with the Pekagan Band of Potawatomi Indians that entitles the city to 2% of the net win from the newly opened Four Winds South Bend Casino, which will yield at least $2 million per year, with the first payments expected in January of 2019. And when it That is good news. Of course, when it comes to revenue, the best source of revenue is economic growth. The more valuable our property and the more income we make, the more resources are available to provide top quality services as a city without having to turn to increased tax rates. We are growing more and more quickly, which should mean more revenue in the long run. But for that to work out, much depends on the way that property values are assessed. And in recent years, overall net assessed value in our city has not always reflected the economic growth that we've seen around us. And we continue to hear from residents concerned about assessments they feel are too low or too high. The city has no direct control over assessed valuation, but we are in frequent communication with the Office of the County Assessor on these concerns. According to state data, our county is in the bottom quartile on both accuracy and equity among the 20 largest Indiana counties. And one outside analysis estimated that if we can improve this as a county, that could mean several million dollars a year in increased revenue for the city, county, schools, and library. Making assessments more fair and accurate will be complex because these issues are rooted in a number of problems, some of which may go back more than a decade. But with a very high level of urgency, the city has asked the county assessor to embrace a range of help being offered from multiple sources, including the Penn Township Assessor, the county auditor, the city administration, a team of nonprofit consultants, and researchers at the University of Notre Dame to help make sure that our assessments are as fair and as accurate as possible for all residents. I've heard a lot of numbers in this speech, and we spend a lot of time and effort in our administration focusing on what we can count, but we also are a city that knows the power of symbols. In June, we unveiled a life-size bronze statue of Father Ted Hesburgh and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Main Street, created by local artist Tuck Langland. The statue has already served as a focal point in several marches and events, and I encourage everyone to take some time in your next visit downtown to join hands, literally, with these great leaders and reflect on how we today can live up to their legacy. These two look symbolically on the seat of justice in our county courthouse, supervising it from across Main Street, and are a fitting complement to the city's actions in recent years to name a prominent downtown roadway as Martin Luther King Boulevard and recognizing a city holiday in honor of Dr. King. Of course, inclusion is about a lot more than symbols. Our office has made a concerted effort to increase the diversity of mayoral appointees to boards and commissions, and the city is implementing new tools for tracking diversity in our own hiring and promotions. Our Office of Diversity and Inclusion has brought renewed focus to diversified purchasing, finding new ways to identify certified minority and women-owned businesses, and this year commissioning a diversity purchasing disparity study to collect data so that we can be accountable for achievement and progress when it comes to doing business with diverse vendors in the city's marketplace. Our city is also partnering with Prosperity Now, an initiative that helped us create a racial wealth divide profile, surfacing some uncomfortable truths and laying out honestly the statistics around our community's economic and racial gaps. To kickstart action on that racial wealth gap, our team has held a series of asset mapping meetings where community members are helping identify entrepreneurship opportunities in our neighborhoods. We are working hard to practice what we preach as a city, when it comes to inclusion, and also when it comes to sustainability. We've invested in cleaner vehicles, rain gardens, solar panels, recycling and composting, and green infrastructure. As I said earlier, when it comes to climate change, we are already on the business end of it. And yet, federal inaction is compelling cities to take the lead. So South Bend will do our part. Last summer, we joined the U.S. Climate Mayors, pledging to support the climate goals set out in the Paris Agreement. And tonight, I am announcing that South Bend will join the Global Covenant of Mayors for Climate and Energy. Joining this international coalition means that we commit to measuring greenhouse gases here, setting ambitious reduction goals, and creating a community-wide plan to cut emissions. We are already underway toward many of these goals. The city's clean fleet of 218 hybrid natural gas and electric vehicles has saved hundreds of thousands of dollars. Our CNG solid waste trucks have saved 1,600 tons of greenhouse gases and nearly a quarter of a million. And energy efficiency savings contracts are saving tax money have already delivered the equivalent of taking 95 homes off the grid. We're even piloting an effort to take biogas from our solid waste treatment plant and use it to power our CNG fleet and equipment. We've got a bit of an internal competition on what nickname to give this program, but I won't spoil the surprise. This year, the city and other interveners also got involved in Indiana and Michigan Power's request for a rate increase. And by intervening, we helped to limit those monthly rate increases by more than two-thirds of the requested amount, reducing the burden on low-income ratepayers. We also signaled that the city will view future rate increases with climate in mind, and we have challenged and invited INM to be part of the solution. We will continue to look for ways where the city can lead on this issue, including another measure that I'm pleased to announce this evening, installing two new electric vehicle charging stations downtown at the corner of Lafayette and Jefferson, right across from the County City Building. This installation should be complete by the end of this month as a pilot project for future ways that we can enhance and incentivize electric vehicle use around the city. So come on down, plug in, and stay a while. We've got a lot to be proud of in South Bend, but the reality is that our city never operates in a vacuum. I've spoken of the importance of the county on issues ranging from taxes to public safety. We're also closely engaged with the state. While we remain concerned about some actions in the legislature to preempt local authority, we have also maintained a very productive partnership with the state on infrastructure and economic issues. I have spoken with Governor Holcomb and his representatives on how South Bend could benefit from the new provisions for opportunity zones in the recent tax bill. And we were thrilled to receive enhanced road funding from the state of Indiana, thanks to bold action on gas tax revenues that have allowed us to use, for example, the Community Crossings Program to help add 10 lane miles to our paving program this past year. When it comes to the federal government, we will continue to look for partnerships there too, although it may not surprise you to learn that I'm not as frequent a visitor at the White House as I used to be. But we have to continue paying attention to what's happening outside. From local dreamers who have spoken out about their desire to remain in this community as taxpaying loyal Americans, to make sure that they know our support, to residents who are affected by policy changes in the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid, we have to do everything we can to support residents, whether they are impacted by policy actions or policy inactions coming from Washington. And these concerns go beyond policy. Our whole society seems increasingly frayed, and many are wondering whether they even fit in today's America. In the face of increased hate crimes, certain American families are wondering if they are even welcome. In the face of additional bullying and school violence, American children are wondering if they are safe at school. And the solutions to these problems will come not from Washington, but from communities like South Bend. No matter what you see on cable news, we have the power and the obligation to be the kind of safe and welcoming community that everyone hopes to live in. Through individual acts of kindness and shared local decision-making, we can better live up to America's ambitious and inclusive creed right here at home. This is the virtue of living in a city that is guided by values, not just by interests. And when it comes to social change, of all the tremendous things happening in our community, the dedication of our city employees, the dynamism of our business community, the passion of our neighborhood activists, nothing gives me more hope as a leader than to see the empowerment of young people. From the South Bend Youth Task Force, now in its fourth year, tackling some of the toughest issues in our community, to the students around the nation organizing to demand action on school and gun safety, young people in this community have been an inspiring voice for change. They are the ones who have seen to it that tragedy and apathy will never have the last word. They are asking for nothing more than adults living up to our obligation to keep them safe and to create opportunity for them. I felt two things watching those students performing earlier today. One, of course, is pride in these wonderful, talented students that we have. And the other was a sense of duty, the voice in my head looking at those kids saying, we had better not let them down. They are a voice of moral clarity, and they deserve our support. It's a good thing young people are stepping up, too, because we're going to need young people and people of all generations engaged in preparing for the changes ahead. Just yesterday, I met with the advisory board of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and introduced the Mayor's Task Force on Automation, which I'll be chairing. Automation technology has the potential to bring both enormous disruption and great benefit to our society, and that is particularly true of communities like South Bend. This is no longer a theoretical discussion. As I shared earlier, we are already using automation for parts of our trash trucks today. As we speak, autonomous vehicles are delivering pizzas in Miami and picking up Uber passengers in Pittsburgh. And it's too soon to know what all of the impacts of this coming wave of automation are going to be, with self-driving cars just one element. But what we do know is that South Bend must prepare for the changes coming to our economy and our households, as well as our city operations. There will be risks as our economy shifts to accommodate the arrival of new jobs and the departure of old ones. But there could also be tremendous benefits from enhanced mobility for seniors who could take a car without having to drive it, to new possibilities for land use, far more attractive than surface parking lots. Our job is to make sure we're one of those cities that experiences more benefits than downsides from this and so many of the other changes to come. Fortunately, South Bend has what it takes to prepare for that uncertain future. Strong neighborhoods, forward-thinking leadership, honesty about our challenges, openness to new ideas, and a healthy relationship among the academic, private, social, and public sectors. Most importantly of all, we have a sense of shared purpose in continually becoming that city we seek to be, that city where everyone can thrive. The year ahead and the years ahead will bring forward, yet again, challenges and opportunities as we enter the final third of a decade that I'm convinced will go down in history as one of the most consequential and transformative and positive in the life of this community. And with your help and your commitment, what we have seen to date is just the beginning of the extraordinary story of perseverance and achievement in this hometown we all love.